The same couldn't be said for my uncle. Later that day, I went to see him. His shop, a block from the ocean, exuded elegance in the mirrors and rugs, the dressing rooms with velvet curtains, the walnut counter, and the cash register with a brass eagle on top. Even the sign, Petticoat Lane, was out of the ordinary. Instead of painted block letters, the words were stamped out of metal and written in longhand. You didn't see signs like that very often. I know a little about hinges from my work as a locksmith. Uncle Sam's door had been mounted on the best hinges and opened at a touch. A small bell tinkled whenever anyone entered or left. My uncle was measuring a thick-bottomed matron who would require a good stretch of material. One look at me, and he nearly swallowed the straight pins pressed between his lips. Stretching the tape round the woman, he lurched forward, almost knocking her over, and then jumbled his measurements. "Waist 23, he mumbled, but my guess was 32. Flustered, his hands shaking, he asked the woman to return later that day. "Good to see you, Uncle Sam," I cheerfully lied. "Just came from seeing Aunt Anna." That information, as I'd hoped, stopped him dead in his tracks. He adored his wife, and rightfully. She never criticized his lazy labors and always brightened his home. As Pop used to say, the best thing about Sam was Anna. She told me about the telegram and flowers and payments to Mom.
You didn't tell her, did you?
Not yet.
I can explain, he sniveled.
No need. Just give me the money. I stuck out my hand.
You have no idea how hard it has been. You saw how we live. I'm saving up for a big house, one with a ramp, so your aunt can easily get in and out and have something nice.
Judging from this shop, I said, looking around, I would have guessed business was good.
Awful. Girls nowadays hardly wear nothing. No one wants slips or petticoats, except for maybe a wedding. I've had to add other lines, bunting and flags.
I hear you're working two jobs.
What do you mean?
The store and the Signal Corps. He looked blank until it dawned on him that somehow I knew.
How? He sputtered.
Friends.
You?
I knew what he meant. For my friends to know about him, they had to be bootleggers.
Ever hear of A.R.? I asked, knowing the answer to my question in advance.
Big joke.
I rummaged around in my pocketbook for the key to the Rothstein's front door and noticed that I was still walking around with my purloined pick and tension wrench.
See this key? I asked, holding it up. It opens A.R.'s front door. Don't believe me? Call him. I'll give you his personal number.
My uncle pounded his chest with one fist and began breathing deeply. Whenever Pop bawled him out, he pleaded ill health.
All my life, Solly is the smart one, Sam the donkey. He was the favorite. My parents always compared me to him. Solly's successful, you're not. Everyone loved your father, tall and handsome. Me, short and plain. The one good thing in my life was Anna. How long can a man live in the shade? I wanted too some light.
So you stole.
I hated myself for it.
He took out a hanky and let out a rhino roar, as if ridding his internal pain through his nose. I was almost convinced, until it occurred to me that he didn't hate himself enough to return what he took.
Just give me the money you owe Mom, and I'll walk out of here and not say a word ever to anyone.
He went behind the counter, opened the cash register, and immediately closed it without removing the cash.
The dough or else, I said in my best mobster manner. I can't.
Why not?
I told you, I'm saving up for a house, special for Anna.
If she knew where the money came from, I don't think she'd want to move in.
Reaching under the register, he pulled out a pistol.
Don't make a move, he said angrily, pointing the gun at my head. Anna must never know, and the money stays right where it is.
My first reaction was,
This is a bad moving picture, or pulp fiction. To this day, I'm convinced that my Uncle Sam, like most people, had so little imagination that even under stress, he took his manners and mutterings from others. That's why he sounded like a bandito in a magazine or a book.
"In the storeroom," he growled, shoving me into the back room of his shop and locking the door behind me.
"You should bite your tongue," I shouted, "and poison yourself." The windows were barred against burglars, and the door that led to the alley secured from the outside. The room held numerous bolts of material and smelled of silks and taffeters, except for the disinfectant stored in the airless matchbox-sized bathroom. I don't know why, but the first thing that crossed my mind was that as long as I'm locked up in here, he can't get to the toilet to pee. Taking stock, I noticed that some bolts of fabric stood not upright, but at an angle. In the hope of finding another way out, I pushed them aside and stumbled upon a large freestanding safe. I could hardly keep from laughing. My uncle had given me, a trained locksmith, as much privacy as a safecracker could want. All I lacked was a drill or some nitro, or some luck. Cross my heart and hope to die if staring me in the face wasn't a Geldschrank safe. No need for tools and explosives. Here was one of the three flawed Austrian safes that couldn't be traced. I now knew where two of them were. Remembering how Mr. Courtney opened the one in Southport, I tried to tip the safe forward, but was unable to budge it. From one of the bolts, I stripped off yards of linen, uncovering the pole underneath, which I used as a lever. In my geometry class, Mrs. Hewlett had told us the story of Archimedes, who had said that if he had a lever large enough and an elevated place high enough on which to stand, he could lift the world. I had the lever. Climbing up on a windowsill, I applied downward pressure on the lever and tilted the safe forward onto its edge. The rest was a cinch. I spun the dials and pulled the door open. Papers and files came tumbling out, as well as three shoeboxes filled with cash, bonds, and coins. One box bore the name Anner, but compared to the other two boxes, it held only peanuts, less than a grand. My counting was interrupted by Uncle Sam's voice on the phone. I'd missed the start of the conversation, which must have occurred while I was jimmying open the safe.
"In the back room." Pause. "I can't figure it out, but I'm telling you she knows." Pause. "You'd better make it over here sooner than 45 minutes, 'cause I have to pish."
The door leading into the shop had a warded lock and would have been a breeze to open, except for my uncle inside with a pistol butt peering out of his pocket. Through the keyhole, I could see him pacing the floor. The shades had been drawn, and undoubtedly the front door was locked and the closed sign hanging in the window. To and fro, he paced faster and faster. At first, I thought he had a case of the jitters, but when I saw him grab his abdomen, I realized he had to pee. 35 minutes had elapsed. He could stand it no longer. Tiptoeing to the front door, he silently opened and closed it, disappearing from sight. I figured he'd probably ducked in next door, so I had to hurry. In a jiff, I lined up the wards, unlocked the door, grabbed the shoeboxes, and stuffed them into a handled shopping bag marked Petticoat Lane that I found under the counter. Just as I reached the street, my uncle emerged from a shop two doors away. Seeing me, he immediately gave chase. I turned sharply down the narrow passageway between his building and the one adjoining. Slinging my pocketbook over my shoulder and hanging on for dear life to the shopping bag handles, I ran so fast, I'm sure, had I been clocked with a stopwatch, I would have qualified for the sprints in the Olympics. At the end of the passageway, with freedom in sight, a shot rang out. My pocketbook kicked my shoulder blade, but I never stopped running till I'd reached the rooming house. Hank was pacing the porch.
"Where were you? I've been sick with worry."
I told him that I'd visited an aunt who lived in Cape May and had lost track of the time. I profusely apologized and went to my room. My pocketbook now had a bullet hole right in the middle. When I unzipped it, my knees sagged. Lying side by side were a piece of lead and a bent silver dollar. At dinner time, I excused myself to make a telephone call. I want to thank my aunt for the time she spent with me. Intending to tell her the truth about Uncle Sam, I didn't know where to start, so I just let the matter drop. I could hear his voice insisting that she find out where I was staying. When my aunt finally asked, I lied, "The Chalfont Hotel." No sooner had she told him than in the background I could hear a door slam. "Has Uncle gone out?" I innocently asked. "He said he just remembered he left the lights on in the store." I could detect a sadness in my aunt's voice. "You sound as if something's wrong, Aunt Anna." "I might as well tell you. The surprise I planned for you has been lost. Sam was in charge of it. With business so good, I made Sam put away money for your tuition and college expenses. Today," she said, "he was robbed." And she broke down and cried.